It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
Start on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
His house, the three and the lead. You betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The quarter,
PJ Tucker.
Gordon by Gordon Branch.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
What is up, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that actually tastes like a candy bar. You can go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON and actually get $10 off your first order. Now, as always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin. You can catch me on the Twitter, on the bird, at JT Gatlin. And of course, our show is also on there, at Locked On Rockets. And hey, if you appreciate the Rockets content we do here, like the number of really awesome guests that we bring on the show, the analysis, the speculation, the rumors, all of it, do me a favor, hit that subscribe button on iTunes or on Spotify, drop us a review, leave us some stars, and above all else, share the podcast on all your social media platforms. I would sincerely appreciate it. Now, for today's episode, we will continue in part two of our Rockets villains discussion with Adam Clanton. So, Adam, this last honorable mention, and it's pretty obvious why it's an honorable mention now, Russell Westbrook.
Oh, geez, the Achilles heel for my Twitter timeline. I mean, what can you say? The guy just – he is very – he's like if Patrick Beverley had God-given physical abilities that were just off the charts, because while he's not that pest necessarily from the standpoint of I want to try and get under your skin, he absolutely can rub you the wrong way if you're an opposing fan base. And obviously he did that to the Rockets. As much as I loved Kevin Durant on those Thunder teams, I could not stand Russell Westbrook. I called him Donatello. I made fun of the fact that he couldn't shoot three-pointers at a high clip. I made fun of the fact that the goalposts were moved for James Harden's MVP candidacy from a team the year before that they gave it the MVP award to Steph Curry because he was on the team with the best record and he was the best player on that team. To a year later, all of a sudden the goalposts have moved because a guy on the six-seed squad who the Rockets eliminated in that postseason was given the award because he was averaging a triple-double. I mean, the list goes on, and I'll never forget, I was about to leave town to go on a family summer vacation this past July when I found out that the Rockets had traded Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook. And I believe, I'm trying not to paraphrase because it was a very short tweet. I believe what I tweeted was, don't talk to me right now, because I knew – I knew what I was in for, and I remember, like, I don't think it was my wife, but I think it was somebody fairly close to me said, so are you going to delete all of your tweets about him? And they weren't saying it for effect. They were seriously asking me if I was going to delete all of the things I had said about Russell Westbrook over the years. And
you'd probably clear up about a terabyte of storage on your computer.
I mean, my phone would have to reset. Like, the thing about it is I was still awaiting word as to whether or not I would be put back on the Rockets broadcasts. So, I mean, believe it or not, as petty as that sounds or as insignificant as that really probably is in the grand scheme of things, you never know with these things. And that could be, you know, something that, you know, some people would consider a problem if they weren't a thicker skinned, I guess. As much criticism as the Rockets get for being a thin-skinned organization with rabbit ears, I've heard that before. I think they probably deserve a little bit more credit on the surface than people give them. But people just don't know a lot of things that go on behind the scenes. I just remember saying to anybody who would ask me that kind of question, absolutely not. You know, I've never changed who I am or what I think. And you know what? Prove to me that you deserve to be in that backcourt replacing Chris Paul. Because I got to tell you, there's times even right now that I miss Chris Paul on the Rockets roster. The Rockets' first championship squad did not win 65 games. Now, the Rockets that did win 65 games didn't win a championship, But the best record in franchise history was not 1993-94. It was 2017-2018. And Chris Paul was the point guard on that team. And he brought a completely different approach from getting prepared for games to executing in late game situations to being a steadying, calming influence over the offense to, you know, putting a foot in the backside of one James Harden that, you know, you can argue right or wrong. You know, Russell Westbrook doesn't necessarily bring to the table, but there are obviously things he does bring to the table that Chris Paul just can't do. And most of them are from a physical standpoint. It's obviously an incomplete grade so far, but I mean, it didn't, I mean, I don't know how you feel. I don't know how other Rockets fans feel. It didn't take me very long to embrace him. And the funny part about that was he didn't play very well to start this year. The guy had knee surgery, did not do a lick of basketball activity throughout the offseason, and then he's traded to a team where it's the only other team he's ever played for in the NBA in 9 seasons or whatever it is, 10 seasons or whatever. So he had a lot to overcome. He was behind the eight ball, so to speak, going into this year. There's a lot of pressure on his shoulders, not physically right, you know, not at 100%. And to his credit and to the Rockets' credit, he was able to play his way into basketball shape. He was able to contribute. He did not keep chucking up threes, which has been his MO for most of his career. The guy just doesn't do that anymore. And the Rockets, in return, traded Clint Capella. People want to, you know, argue, debate about that decision. I think that's another incomplete decision as well, because we just don't know what the final analysis is for this era of Rockets basketball. But all of the things that I, you know, didn't like about the guy, criticized him for, some of them are still there, but a lot of them have been negated or offset by things that you see when you watch him on a night-to-night basis that you just can't see if you're watching him from afar and he's the opposition versus a guy who's on the side of the good guys, if you will.
I do. Honestly, I agree with pretty much everything you said. There are plenty of times that I still miss Chris Paul, but by that same token, there's, you know, the things that Russell Westbrook can do and can provide that Chris Paul couldn't. And you're right. He's a very easy guy to root for. Once he's on your team, you know, he's a guy that, you know, you'd be willing to go to war with. You know, you see him go out there and bleed with so much passion every single night. It's hard not to root for the guy. And so I'm you know, excited that he's a part of the squad, and I'm excited to see what's going to happen with, you know, NBA basketball coming back. It sounds like, you know, they're shooting for mid-July, which is exciting. But he was my last honorable mention. I figured you'd get a kick out of that one. Just, you know, your own personal ties with the Brody. Coming up, I want to get Adam's thoughts on the most villainous organizations the Rockets have been up against over the many years. But first, I want to tell you guys a bit more about Built Bars. So look, again, honestly, you know, it's summer 2020, that body doesn't matter, right? But it's not too late to start working on summer 2021 body, because by then, hopefully with, you know, COVID-19 minimized and whatnot, we'll be back at the beaches and able to kind of, you know, enjoy the outdoors again and won't be socially distancing and all that. And protein bars, they're an important part of that, right? About getting in shape, staying in shape, maintaining a good physique. And look, if you're a guy that does a lot of working out, or, you know, even minimal working out, you know, you need protein. You know, sometimes when I'm running late, you know, to work or running errands, whatever it may be, trying to run out the door, it's nice to be able to just grab a couple protein bars and just head straight out the door. And look, these protein bars are actually yummy, right? Like, you think protein bars, sometimes you think, oh, I got to eat a protein bar. Not anymore. Not with Built Bars, right? They are covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft. They're easy to chew. It's a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. And you can try it right now. If you go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get $10 off your first order. But that's only if you go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your very first order. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, chatting with Sports Talk 790's Adam Clanton. As far as organizations go, though, just if we were to like narrow it down to the top five most hated rock organizations, you know, from a Rockets fan perspective, how would you order them?
Oh, boy.
I mean, think there's kind of, I feel like Jazz is consensus number one.
I don't know about that.
Really? Okay.
Well, because here's why. Like, it depends on how old are you? Literally, how old are you as a Rockets fan? Because, I mean, Craig Ackerman and I have talked about this on the air, by the way, during a broadcast of a game, how much you know, Rockets fans for years on have despised the Jazz organization, but there's kids running around that are 15, 20, even 25 years old that just don't have that same distaste or detest for the for that organization. They might have, you know, felt like those 2007-2008 endings to those seasons were heartbreaking, particularly in the case of the 2007 one, where you lost Game 7 on your home floor and had a significant lead in the second half. But it's not like going through the fire to get to the finals and win a championship, and you had to you know, win on the road in Utah like you did in a five-game series, mind you, in 1995, April of 1995. So, you know, that team becomes the Warriors, I think, for a lot of younger Rockets fans. Where do the Spurs factor in, considering you did not lose a playoff series to them ever until that 2016 series? And how bitter that was because of the game that James Harden had that night, or in that case didn't have. But they're interstate. Same with the Mavericks. Bitter playoff defeats in the mid-2000s to them.
A team that I didn't mention any players from earlier, Seattle Supersonics, but that goes back to the 90s.
But yeah, that's,
the 90s and 80s,
the thing. Younger fans don't even know what the Sonics are. I mean, they don't know, or they might not realize that Kevin Durant was drafted by a team in Seattle the Seattle Sonics are the team that ended the Rockets championship reign in a sweep, by the way. They didn't win a game against that team, and that was a team that kept them from probably facing off against the Bulls on either side of Jordan's retirement. It wasn't just that the Rockets couldn't get there to face them in 1997 because the Jazz knocked them off. They couldn't get there in 96 because the Sonics knocked them off, the eventual Western Conference champion.
And in 1993,
when Jordan was playing for his third straight championship against the Suns, the Rockets lost to the Sonics. And get this, this is the worst part that maybe a lot of people don't know about. So the Rockets play the Sonics in 1993, and Matt Bullard was talking about this with us last week on our show. He said, if we win that series, I think the Rockets are talking about a three-peat and not necessarily the Bulls, because what happened was on the final game of the season in 1993, the Spurs won a game in San Antonio by a basket. Tell me if you've heard this before.
Oh, God.
It was counted. The basket was counted after the buzzer. This was what instituted or a part of what instituted the lights that you now see on the backboard and on the sideline table for when the buzzer goes off, so that when you're reviewing whether or not a shot was released in time, whether or not it's still in a player's hand, those lights go off. That's how you know that. You didn't have that back in 93. So David Robinson gets a basket counted that goes in, beats the Rockets. I think that either sent it to overtime or the basket happened in overtime. The Rockets lose that game. Because the Rockets lost that game, they lost home court advantage throughout the playoffs. They lost home court advantage in a series with the Sonics. Well, that series, every single home game was won by the home team, or every single game was won by every home team, in other words. So the Sonics won games 1 and 2. The Rockets won games 3 and 4. The Sonics won game 5. The Rockets won game 6. And the Sonics win a bitter game 7 overtime victory to advance to play the Suns. The Suns end up beating the Sonics, led by the MVP of that season, Charles Barkley, and they go on to lose to the Bulls in 6 games on John Paxson's three-pointer. So, you know, you're rewriting history if you win that game, that series. Maybe you beat the Suns that year, which, by the way, is not a gimme. The Rockets had to beat the Suns both years they won the championship behind, you know, Charles Barkley and Kevin Johnson. Those were tough Phoenix teams.
But they did it twice.
But they did it twice, and they did it down 0-2 both years. There's a lot of stuff that maybe Rockets fans don't really know or remember about that, and the Sonics were always in the way of the Rockets. The Sonics were employing a triple team or an illegal defense before that rule was made on Hakeem Olajuwon. Hakeem Olajuwon was triple teamed before he got the ball by the Seattle Sonics. They were the one team that was a matchup problem for him. Nate McMillan Hersey Hawkins, Gary Payton, obviously, Sean Kemp, Detlef Schrempf, Sam Perkins, Big Smoove, was a matchup nightmare for Hakeem from a defensive standpoint because he would stand out on a three-point line from the center position shooting threes. That's normal nowadays. That was unheard of in the early 90s. So it's a lot about the way the game was played in the 90s. It's a lot about the way the Sonics played the game and how they defended the Rockets. They were just a bad matchup problem for the Rockets, and they were probably the reason why we didn't get to see epic matchups in the finals between Michael Jordan's Bulls and Hakeem Olajuwon's Rockets.
Multiple defenders thrown at your best player before he even gets the ball. I'm familiar with this story.
Yeah, you can do that now if you can get away with it. But, you know, they just – George Karl was their coach and really just – I mean – and especially before Hakeem had another superstar alongside him, in a lot of years it was Hakeem, and that was it. And if you could shut Hakeem down, you had a pretty good chance to beat the Rockets, and the Sonics did that better than anybody else.
So, all right. So if we're not – and I hear you, and I think that's a good point, is that it does change depending on your age. So can we at least – I feel like as a unified front, it's got to be Jazz, Warriors, Supersonics, Mavericks, Spurs, right? That's a solid top five. Now you can put them in whatever order you want, or do you think there's another team that belongs in there somewhere?
I think you got to put the Lakers in there.
And, really? Okay.
Yeah, and that's another one that goes back. So obviously, you know, they were in the way of the Rockets potentially playing the Celtics for the championship in 2008. I really do think the Rockets, if they were at full strength, were the only team that could have competed with that Lakers team that eventually, I believe in 08, they played for and lost the championship to the Celtics. And then they had a rematch the next year in 09 and the Lakers won. I think the Rockets, though, you got to remember, this is something else that maybe a lot of Rockets fans might not know. In the 80s, when the Rockets had the Twin Towers, they drafted Ralph Sampson in 83. By winning a coin toss. They won the coin toss the very next year and drafted Hakeem number one. In the draft, Jordan went number three. They had a great squad of those two superstars and a lot of other really good role players to stars that was basically derailed by drugs. I mean, honestly, the John Lucases of the world, Lewis Lloyd, all those guys that their careers were derailed by basically outside forces that had nothing to do with basketball, and Ralph Sampson getting injured as well. That team, you forget, knocked off the Lakers in 86. And as a matter of fact, today's the anniversary of that shot. Today, May 21st, in 1986, Ralph Sampson hit that turnaround to beat the Los Angeles Lakers in like five games, I think, and advanced to the NBA Finals to play arguably one of the greatest teams, if not the greatest team in NBA history, the 86 Celtics. And the Rockets took them to six games. That's how good Hakeem was in his second or third season. So after that year is when all that kind of stuff started to unravel, and it was basically Hakeem and a bunch of Jamokes for several years, where Hakeem's putting up insane numbers, quadruple doubles on some nights, and just carrying the Rockets with no help whatsoever until they can finally get a good team around him in the early 90s, and eventually Rudy takes over as coach and they win the two championships. But the 80s should have been, put it this way, a lot more competitive between Houston and LA than it ended up being. Yeah, they were the Showtime Lakers, but they had problems with the Rockets. Kareem had problems with Hakeem, who was just this scary monster who didn't care. He'd punch a referee. He'd punch a player. This is before he found Islam and inner peace and was centered and, you know, became this gentle giant. This guy was a maniac and put up, I mean, insane numbers. And I think they would have been a much bigger problem for the likes of the Lakers, the Showtime Lakers in the 80s, if it had not been for Ralph Sampson's premature into his career due to injuries. And then, you know, the drugs and demons that kind of pulled apart some of the players off that 86 Rockets team, because this wasn't like 81 where it was kind of a fluke and they had Moses Malone and Dream wasn't there yet, Ralph wasn't there yet, and they were a feel-good story that made it to the finals with like a 500 record. The 86 Rockets, they were the real deal, and they gave the Celtics all they could handle in that series.
Adam makes a really good point, and I actually have a counter question for you in just a second, but really quick, I want to tell you guys about Blinkist. So, you know, this is one of the most useful apps on my phone, one of the ultimate life hacks, whatever you want to call it. You know, it's this really unique app. It takes the best key takeaways, the need to know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and condense them down into just 15 minutes that you can listen to. Look, I mean, everybody's busy, right? Work, school, personal stuff, you know, dealing with family. You know, you might just not have the time to read as much as you want to. Even now, even with COVID-19 having shut everything down, you still might not have time to read. I know I don't have time to read. I wish I did, but I don't, you know? So Blinkist allows you this access to all these, this huge, massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books that you've wanted to read over the years and just you never really had the time to, and they're all in one place and all for one low price now with Blinkist. And our audience actually has a special offer right now. You can go to Blinkist.com/MBA to try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Blinkist.com/MBA to start your free 7-day trial. And remember, you'll also save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/MBA. And we are back in here for our final segment at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. To follow up on what we talked about at the end of last segment, which team of the five that I did list, which team are you kicking out? If you think the Lakers belong in that top five, which team are you dropping?
Give me the other five again.
Utah Jazz, Golden State Warriors, Seattle Supersonics, Dallas Mavericks, San Antonio Spurs.
The Mavs.
You dropping the Mavs?
Yeah, because the Mavs, I mean, when the Rockets were losing to them in 2005, for example, the series where Michael Finley was clearly out of bounds. I think Tim Donaghy refereed one of those games. That game five.
And where Cuban complained to the referees about Yao.
Yeah, Jeff Van Gundy got fined $100,000 because he had the audacity to point out that NBA officials didn't know how to officiate Yao Ming, which was 200% true. I think it's funny. You know why he was criticizing the officiating? Because they were saying that Yao Ming was setting illegal screens. Fast forward to 2015, and there's Andrew Bogut doing it all the way to a championship, but I digress. I think because it was basically just that series, that's the only time the Rockets matched up with them during that era. I think there was a Dallas playoff series in the 80s where Roy Tarpley and company beat the Rockets in three games, maybe. I'm not sure. I could be wrong on that. I just don't think there's as many matchups where the Rockets, you know, lost out to the Mavericks to where it's that big of a rivalry to me, the way
to where they're not true villains. They're just, it's like a little brother complex.
Yeah. Cause when the Rockets were good, the Mavericks weren't. When the Mavericks were good, the Rockets just weren't quite there. They were never really good at the same time and keeping each other from winning championships. That never really happened. And that honestly, that only happened once with the Spurs. I mean, the Spurs in 95 was it. Before that, I think you had to go back to 81 before they even played a playoff series, if I'm not mistaken.
To be fair, the Spurs have the recent one, too, with 2016.
But that was the first time the Spurs had ever beaten the Rockets in a playoff series. Think about that. The success they'd had, and they just never matched up was the main reason. So, honestly, you could take, you know, were the Spurs one of those?
Yeah, they were.
I mean, you could probably take out the Spurs, too. It's between the two Texas teams, ironically. I just think there's more history with all the other teams we mentioned, including the Warriors of recent, that make it more of a rivalry.
That's fair. That's a fair assessment. And as far as, you know, villainous rivalries go, I appreciate the argument from the Lakers standpoint. So, and appreciate the history lesson too. I love it when I get to chat with guys that are, you know, a bit older than me, not calling you old. Sorry, Adam. but, you know, guys who have a bit more, you know, NBA experience than I do, because it's cool kind of getting to hear these stories and kind of, you know, sharing these memories of, you know, the Rockets before I even existed, you know, that kind of thing. I'm born in 95, so I'm going on 25. I'm not quite a zoomer.
You're a baby.
I still claim to be a millennial. I'm at 95. I think that's like the cutoff as far as, you know, being able to claim actually being a millennial. But
yeah, you know, I watched the first championship parade in June of 94. I stood on top of a crosswalk sign on Smith Street. You know, uh-huh. If you go downtown, I think it's the Alley Theater that's right there that you drive through and it becomes Memorial. So on the other side of that, there's that building, there's that high rise building that has like the it's like a concrete cello art piece in front of the lobby of that building.
I know which one you're talking about. Yeah.
It's over there by Bear Paredes. So I stood on the crosswalk in front of that thing to watch the parade as a 13-year-old. So when you tell me you were born the next year in 95, that makes me feel like an old, just ancient old man. Ugh.
Hey, dude, you've got a son. So, I mean, you know, whenever you're feeling ancient, just be like, no, he provides me youthfulness because I've got to chase him around.
He definitely does that.
So to kind of round out this podcast, we would be doing everybody a disservice not to mention a few of the, you know, quote unquote, like off the court. And I say off the court because they're not actual players. Well, one of them was a player, but I've got four names for you here.
Okay.
Scott Foster, Tony Brothers, Bill Simmons, and Charles Barkley.
Where do you want me to start?
I mean, take your pick. I felt like I was trying to rack my brain for the names that came to light most often. And I was like, well, it's these two. It's obviously Foster and Brothers. It's got to be Simmons and it's got to be Barkley because these guys hate on the Rockets incessantly.
Well, Scott Foster has issues with both Chris Paul and James Harden. That was obviously highlighted a couple years ago. Scott Foster and the officials on the whole were not the reason the Rockets lost Game 7 to the Warriors in 2018, but they were a big part of it. And you'll never get me to be convinced otherwise, because everybody always talks about the 27 missed three-pointers. Well, if Scott Foster is not egregiously misofficiating certain plays that should have been counted for 3 points and one shots, for example, on two different occasions against I think Klay Thompson was the defender on both of those, where he clearly fouls Harden. That streak doesn't happen.
Yep.
Like, you don't have 27 missed three-pointers if in the middle of that, two of them go in that are counted the way they're supposed to. So, you know, the fact that Scott Foster was repeatedly texting Tim Donaghy in the days leading up to Tim Donaghy being exposed as a guy who gambled on games and may or may not have been helping to throw games or at least not throw them, but influence them using his power as an NBA official. The fact that's never been investigated is insane to me. And this guy is officiating NBA Finals games to this day.
Yeah, one of the lead officials in the league.
I mean, that's just asinine to me. And I look, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm not a guy that, you know, wants to whine about officials. But come on, man. Like, there comes a certain point where you've got to, like, wake up. Like, I realize David Stern liked to appoint his guys and then just leave them there until they effectively died on the floor, like Dick Pavetta. I mean, the guy was 80 years old refereeing games. Give me a break. You're expecting me to think that this guy can keep up with some of the world's most amazing athletes and use the hand-eye coordination and the quick trigger that you need to be an effective NBA official. Come on. So, you know, that's a little bit sideways, I think. Tony Brothers is just not a good official. He's just not a good official. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. That's just a fact. It's not my opinion. That's just – go watch a game that he referees. He puts himself in the middle of things. He a lot of times has a itchy trigger finger when it comes to technical. He's just not a good official. Bill Simmons is a caricature at this point. He's a guy that I would religiously read when he was writing for Page 2 of ESPN.com back when I was in college, long before he became, you know, this petulant, arrogant, uppity, I don't even know. He is a legend in his own mind. And to his credit, he has built a brand. He has done some very innovative things with regards to social media, with regards to digital media, and with regards to, just like I said, you know, building up his empire, his brand. But I mean, the guy puts whining at an all-time high when it comes to anything that he thinks slights the Celtics, doesn't favor the Celtics, and then, you know, just the petty shots he takes. It, like, he and Daryl Morey were close until all of a sudden it kind of – I think the fame got to his head a little bit.
Things fell apart.
Yeah, I just – you know, Daryl, to his credit, and I think I know him a little bit better than others, not, you know, close or anything like that necessarily, but I you know, I know him enough to say I think that he's pretty much stayed the same. He hasn't changed much over the years from the time I met him when he first started and I was an intern at Channel 2. You know, I can't say the same for Bill Simmons. And that happens sometimes. And then, who was the fourth one?
Charles Barkley.
Oh, of course.
The big mound of rebound.
Look, I mean, Charles did get gypped by Rockets upper management way back when. He took a pay cut so that Scottie Pippen could come here and steal Les Alexander's money and get a DUI. And then they never paid him back. And that led to some very public comments between he and Tad Brown a few years back. I think the Rockets ended up making it right. But it doesn't change the fact that it still feels like Charles goes out of his way to slight them. But Charles has opinions on everything. And Charles is the ultimate loudmouth. You know, if you don't go into it taking him too seriously about anything, and I mean anything, you won't get too riled up. And I've met Charles. Charles is one of the best guys on the planet. I mean, I'm talking about as a human being. He genuinely cares about people. He genuinely is a good guy, I think, at heart. And the fact that he, you know, pops off at the mouth about the Rockets is hardly an aberration. He does that about everybody. Ask the, let's just say, overweight women of San Antonio how they feel about Charles Barkley's opinion on them. You know, I could point to any city, and he will have probably said five things that just morbidly offended everybody there. It's just what he does. He's a provocateur, and he's a loudmouth. It's what he's done his whole life. If you didn't like him during his NBA career, why would you like him talking about the NBA in front of a set? That's just what he does. So Charles is easily my favorite person on that list. And with good reason. I can say, you know, I've had like personal interactions with him where I can, you know, and I've had people that have had far more interactions with him tell me things that I know that people just don't know about the guy. It's a good dude. Trust me on that.
Okay, so we'll absolve him from the villain list. He will just
for sure.
We'll keep him as an abrasive, maybe at times controversial loudmouth. How's that?
You got it. That sounds perfect.
All right. Well, I think that kind of does it. Kind of ran through our list there, got through the players, through the organizations, through the people that didn't really fit into either of those categories, like the refs and Bill Simmons. Anybody that I didn't get to that you think we should have mentioned?
I think Shaq over the years might be one simply because he's said some of the same type of things on the Inside the NBA set. But then going back to the finals against Hakeem, although he always gave Hakeem a lot more respect than he gave any other center, don't forget what he did with Yao Ming before Yao Ming had to earn his respect the first time those two played. And as a matter of fact, I think the Rockets on their YouTube channel are highlighting that either tonight or very soon in the near future. I don't know if you've been checking out some of the things they've got on their YouTube channel. It's been excellent stuff.
Yeah, they're doing great work there.
Yeah, so the first time that Shaq and Yao played each other is just an epic story, both the build-up to the game and the game itself. And the Rockets, spoiler alert, won that game. Check that out because Shaq has always been a looming figure that was in the way of the Rockets getting anything accomplished.
So, didn't he go on like TV like right before that matchup and said something pretty racially insensitive or something? Like he was like,
yeah, if he had done that today, he would have been tarred and feathered. I mean, it was not in good taste then, but that was 2002, 2003, I think, maybe January 2003. Like, he did that now, he would be dragged through the streets. And I'm not saying that what he said was okay. It's just the outcry, the social media aspect of it. He would have been just absolutely creamed if he did that today.
That makes sense. Now, okay, so we'll throw Shaq back on that list, and that, I think that does a pretty good job of kind of rolling through the different, you know, Rockets villains through the different decades. And I appreciate you taking the time to be here and do that with us. As per the usual, can you go ahead and plug where we can find all your stuff at, man?
Oh, absolutely. I will usually be arguing with somebody that I shouldn't be on Twitter at Adam Clanton. If you want to check me out on Instagram, it's the same address. Just put an underscore between the two names. And sometimes I check Facebook, but not really. I'm pretty much a Twitter guy. And then I co-host the A-Team with Adam Wexler on Sports Talk 790. It's the Rockets and Astros flagship station here in Houston, 3 to 6 p.m. Central each and every weekday. And having a blast doing it, even in the middle of this pandemic. We've actually had a good time finding things to talk about every day. And along with our producer, Joe George, we have a good time. So I'd suggest you check it out.
And hopefully in the not-so-distant future, we'll hear you back on the Rockets Radio Network, right?
Man, I'm pulling forward. I don't know what the scenario is going to be. I don't know what the setup's going to be, because even though the games might be back, I don't know what the broadcasting is going to consist of. I'd love to do it, even if it meant I had to do it from a remote location, obviously. Just it'll be good to get them back, though. That's the first and foremost thing when it comes to sports, at least. I know it's a very small bubble we're in, and there's much more important things going on in the world. But I also think that sports plays a pivotal role in healing when it comes to life getting back to normal when things like this happen. Or things, you know, maybe not like this, but you know what I'm trying to say. I'm looking forward to it. I hope I'm a part of it, but even if I'm not, I'm just looking forward to seeing games being played again and all of us kind of getting back to normal.
All right. Well, we appreciate you being here with us today, man.
Absolutely. Thanks. And ask me anytime. I love coming on and appreciate everybody that listens.
Good deal. All right. That's going to do it for today's show. As always, thank you all so much for listening. We look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.